I had enough of that song. That's enough. That's plenty. Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. That was Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
In a minute. www.thematthewaronshow.com. At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You can go to Facebook, type into the search bar, The Matthew Aaron Show. You'll click like, and you will like us.
We will tell you what you are to do.
Right. You will get all our very important updates all the time.
Such as, like, what Matt's eating and who he's going out with.
That's right. It's very important. We're on Stitcher at The Matthew Aaron Show. What else are we on?
Tumblr.
Are we on Tumblr?
I don't know what. I'm just
naming.
I don't think
we're Tumblr.
I'm naming things.
I don't think we're Tumblr.
Ask Jeeves. We're on Ask Jeeves.
Yeah, is Ask Jeeves anywhere? I think it's ask.com, isn't it?
Is it Ask?
I think
okay.
It is. Whatever. And we're here at 603 North Hollywood Way, Taste Chicago. Thank you, Arlene and Joe Montana, for having us yet again. And, of course, come on by and have the mini deep dish pizza, which is fantastic. I'll be having the salad later. We've already had that conversation.
Yeah.
We had that last show. And we are joined today by Mark Evan Jackson and David Rodriguez. Mark Evan Jackson, of course, from Kings of Summer, and which you can see in theaters now, and it's going to be released even wider soon
right.
enough.
Right.
And then David Rodriguez, and we have his film we're going to be talking about, Last I Heard, with Paul Sorvino and Michael Rapaport and Chaz Palminteri. And I'm very excited about this show because it gets back to what we originally are. It's our bread and butter, the indie film.
Right.
You know, I like promoting films that people have to work their asses off to make. Not saying they don't have to work so hard to make Transformers 4, but
no.
I'm betting it's not so hard. So I'm very excited about this. Kings of Summer, of course, in theaters now, getting rave reviews. And, you know, Mark's here, so we'll just start with Mark. Mark Evan Jackson, of course, which everybody may know. He's had a great year. Parks and Recs, that's great. Thrilling Adventure Hour, if you don't follow that, is fantastic. And he's also Bradley Cooper's stand-in.
Yeah.
So that's really good. That's really good. You got a great year going.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, things are going well.
Have you gotten any work from being Bradley stand-in from the Wet Hot American Summer?
To be clear, let me explain what you're talking about. I was Bradley Cooper's stand-in for the reunion of Wet Hot American Summer.
Right, right.
Live on stage once
right.
in San Francisco
oh.
a year ago.
But no one was like, you know, we should use him all the time. Silver linings, David O. Russell didn't call you up and
when
say,
he's not
Brad can't be here. Can we use the back of your
when
head?
When he's not busy as Will Arnett's voice double.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I'm this close to being really famous and wealthy, you guys.
I think you are.
Yeah,
we get a lot of those guys on the show. The ones that are like this close.
Right.
Yes, I am proud of it.
Okay,
you know why? Here's the way I look at it. Because when Mark Evan Jackson is an A-lister in like a couple years,
whenever
you're doing some Apatow films, you're doing whatever, you're going to remember us, and you're going to come on down.
Oh, hell yeah.
And you're going to still do the show. And that is why I love it.
If we're still talking about free Coronas and mini deep dish pizzas, then yeah. I'm
well, gonna... that's what we talk about at Taste Chicago.
Yeah.
Joe Montana's great. You meant Joe? Have
yeah,
you met
totally.
Joe?
He's done a Thrilling Adventure Hour.
He has.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Oh, fantastic.
Was he good?
You know, I think he's got a future.
He does?
Yeah,
really?
He's skilled.
That's good. That's
the,
good. I know he's been working
acting.
Hard.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing, but he's doing something. Oh, Criminal Minds.
He's doing Criminal Minds.
Yeah, that little thing.
You know, just one of the
8 years,
yeah.
whatever.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah. I think that show might take off soon, too.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So let's talk Kings of Summer first.
Let's do, yeah.
All right. So we're doing the traditional summer release where you have a great buzz for an indie film where they limit the release at first and let it grow. Word of mouth, critic approval. And it's getting both. It's getting both.
Sure.
You guys have a – and it's a great cast. The kids in it are great, but then, of course, you have Megan Mullally, Nick Offerman, Alison Brie,
right.
yourself. So this is one of those movies that's definitely catching a lot of word of mouth. How did you get involved in it?
Oh, thank you. I got involved because I know – I've worked with the director, Jordan Vogt Roberts, in the past, and he is somebody that wanted to bring to this movie, which is based on an excellent script by Chris Coletta, a first-time feature writer. But he wanted to bring an element that we've worked with a lot in the past, which is improvisation.
Yeah.
He wanted to see what the world would look like if he never called cut. You know, what would happen before the scripted words began and what would happen after they ended. So I've worked with him a lot in the past on a show called Mashups on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Mashup, and then you know, a number of things for the web, Fox stuff. And
so your first time was Comedy Central that you worked together.
You know,
you've done a lot of work for Comedy Central.
I have.
Yeah.
Comedy Central hit me with their car a number of years ago, and the settlement involves them putting me in bit roles in everything they make.
That's good.
Yeah. Which works out for them.
Because you were on Workaholics last year.
I was,
and you get around
Peele
over there.
And Kroll. And...
Well, Key and Peele, you're perfect for.
Oh,
that's
thank
a great
you.
Show, too.
It's good,
a great
right?
show, and they're fantastic. Yeah.
They're pretty all right, those guys.
Yeah, they seem to be doing okay over at Comedy Central right now.
I think people
now.
Like it. Yeah,
they hit kind of a lull for a while, and now they're picking it up.
That's, yes,
every show there's a hit all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. I just love Keenan Michael Key and Ivory and
Keenan Ivory.
Keenan Ivory Key is very skilled. He and I have been friends for many years. We were on the stage together at the Second City in Detroit in the late 90s.
Really,
Keegan and I. So I've known him since 1997.
That's right. Keegan's from Detroit. That's
yep.
right. Yeah, that's right. right. He's great.
I knew I was right.
Yeah, you knew you were
right. I didn't
right.
need you to confirm
that. I had to confirm for our listeners how much shit Mark Evan Jackson's full of. Okay, so let's talk about you talked about how there's a sense of improv in this film as
sure.
well. How much of it then, how do you, because what I've understood about interviewing people that do improv, like Jim Pittock was on a few weeks ago, and we were talking about Family Tree, is there's a script, and it's, but not in Jim Pittock's case. In Family Tree, it was more of an outline.
Right.
But sometimes there's scripts, and it's word for word. So then how do you improv something that's already on the written page, word for word? Without insulting the writer, I guess.
Sure. I think you pay homage to the writer by staying within the world. Like,
sure.
Obviously, a simple route to comedy is the wildly inappropriate response,
yeah.
you know, like the going outside the world and doing something, which might really get a great laugh out of the crew, you know, and your cast, but will never make it to the final product.
Sure.
So I think the goal is to, you know, find something in the room, find something on the day of shooting, on set, that is addressing, you know, like something that would never have been planned for when the script was written 2.5 years
right.
prior or what have you. And just find, you know, have some trouble with some object in the room or in this. I don't think it actually made this movie, but Thomas Middleditch is in Kings of Summer and he
yeah.
plays the role of rookie cop. And his role is sort of like mine, which is one that was far less on the page. But because he came to it and offered it so much, a lot of the stuff that he brought to it made the final movie. This part did not. But at one point he began a scene inside the police station when the parents go to the police to help them look for their missing children, and he had this leather holster on his police belt holding a gun and was just making a crinkly sound. So just for fun, he just started adjusting it, and he had the first line of the scene, and just for fun he was just with it and was holding us all captive before he would speak to begin the scene. And it's things like that I think inspire a sense of playfulness, but again it's within the world of you know, being the characters that the writer intended.
And that's why it's another form of acting. Improv is acting. And I mean, because what you just explained could very well be seen. You could hear Marlon Brando would have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's true, you know?
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's very interesting because some people sometimes, because I come from Second City, I come from that world, and I think sometimes people don't understand that a lot of improv is acting. You say stay in the world, and what's really important is staying in the character,
sure.
the world of that character that you're in, Mr. Keenan in this movie.
Right.
So you're in this world. So you try to find things to do with your character, I'm assuming. Maybe they aren't on the written page, but that would fit Mr. Keenan. It's just acting, right?
Right.
Oh, positively. Yeah. I mean, it's all those little things, whatever your way to the work is, whatever your method is to get you into that character. It's all those, you know, there are things that your character would say and do, and there are things that are outside of that.
So you believe in not letting other people know what you're doing before you're shooting for the fun of it, for the surprise? Or if you have these ideas, do you think it's better to run them by whoever?
Oh, it's almost never better to run it by anybody. Unless, you know, except for hard things like, are we allowed to swear in this? Or, you know, things like that. Am I allowed to name a name brand product kind of thing?
Okay.
But no, I think it's, you know, for the very few improvisational actors that we're speaking to, save it for the day. Like,
yeah.
don't audition it.
Right.
When you're rolling,
you're right.
That's when you should do it. And I think a lot of the stuff becomes a green light window, too. And what I mean by that is that also in this script, for instance, where I think it's cut from the final product, but I had a line where I say, oh, there have been what in my life? Four, maybe five true geniuses. Jim Henson was one of those geniuses. And just for fun, because it got late and we were dicking around, I started filling in who the others were. So that's just an endless, limitless game where you can go, there have been in my life, what, four, maybe five true geniuses? Jim Henson was one of those. Pete Rose.
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama.
Attila the Hun.
Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. You know, Nostradamus. So you know, that, and obviously you do a different five every single time.
Right.
And it just becomes stupid.
You know? But sometimes they keep the stupid one.
Oh, they frequently keep the stupid. I wouldn't be in this movie if they didn't keep the stupid.
Now, this is your sweet spot. I mean, this is improv where you get to take a role, and like you said, sometimes it expands the role from the script.
Sure.
Have you worked with directors who didn't want you to improv?
Not recently. No, I think that I feel as though there's a trending acceptance and even embracing of improvisation.
I feel that way, too. Even with big studio movies, sometimes you hear that they do some improv now.
But I also feel, though, by the way, Lee Capreas, hello.
Oh, yeah. You want to
introduce myself?
Yourself?
Yeah, it's okay. Welcome. Well, you used to do it.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. Have some deep dish.
I feel like those are concerns. Some younger directors actually are not so good with directing actors. It's kind of a dodge, though. I mean, you're lucky you have good actors, you have pros that know what they're doing and all that, but a lot of times I think I see some sort of big movies and I think, I could use a little direction there for choices for the character if you let people have maybe too much freedom sometimes. Depends on the material, obviously.
Sure, positively.
Well, and that leads to the question, what makes the difference between a good improv director and a bad improv director?
I think a good director is still a director. I think they still know... perhaps better than anybody because they've spent all this time with the script and with the pre-production, they still know perhaps better than anybody the strict confines of the world. And they know better than anybody the tone that they're after. So, you know, they may not be shooting to the edit of what they want for the final film, but they know, you know, something that silly, something that, although it made the crew laugh and it made the cast laugh and we all broke and it was hard to regain our composure, it won't fit tonally with where it's, because right after this, the car crash happens, or right after this, she breaks up with the dude, or whatever. So I think the director, you know, that embraces improv is successful most when they are still have a feel for what they want the movie to be, and the tone, and the world, and I think the most successful improv directors, or at least the evidence to me of those that are the best at it, are those that once you improvise a scene can go come up to you and go, that was great, do something different, or more specific. They're specific in the sense that they come to you and say, that was great, obviously we can't use this, rope it in, cornball, we have to stay a little closer
That's
to the
tough.
World or whatever.
Yeah
I mean, that they really know the world. And Jordan Vogt Roberts is a genius, and this is his feature debut, but he is I plan on working for him for the remainder of my life.
That's a good idea.
He's fantastic and truly embraces it, so much so that he asked me beforehand for the names of a couple of people that I would recommend, because he wanted, prior to shooting this movie, to put the three main actors through improv, intensive, to get them up to speed, just so that they could live in the skins of these characters if he never called cut. So
they did some
improv intensives with Craig Kukowski, who's actually in the movie as well. He plays the school teacher right at the beginning.
Yeah.
With the broken birdhouse.
So a lot of these people you've probably have done things with, like Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally, are also improv geniuses.
They are.
So now, is this like when you guys all get together? Was that the plan for this film, to get a group of people who have worked together to do this movie?
I don't know. I think it's you mentioned Apatow before, and I think Jordan is a guy. Not unlike that, who has a cadre of people around him that he really likes working with. So I had met Offerman because Offerman had done the Thrilling Adventure Hour with us before. I had never met Megan before.
Really?
And she's wonderful and, you know...
she's so funny.
Insanely good and playful and troublemaking. But I had worked with some of the other folks. Obviously not the kids, but Thomas Middleditch and Mary Lynn Rice Cub and Alison Brie I've worked with before.
Yeah, Mary Lynn, she does the Thrilling Adventure Hour too, right?
I don't know if she
has. Has she done it?
I don't know.
I think she has.
I want to say she has, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
I think we've gotten...
Maybe I'm wrong. But you do it all the time, so you would know. You would probably know better than
me. I've missed three in 8 years, so.
That's it?
It's possible.
All
yeah.
you've missed is three?
Yeah, I don't like not doing it. That's my favorite thing in the world.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
To do that show?
Your favorite thing in the world is to do that show.
Well, golf and fishing, but. But, yeah, no, it's pretty great.
That's great. Now, when's the next time you guys are doing one?
You know, we're going to Comic-Con.
You are?
Really?
We're doing four shows.
That just got announced,
right? It just got announced on Monday, yeah, a couple days ago. I think we're there the 19th and 20th of July, and I don't know where, but I'm sure on the thrillingadventurehour.com website you can find out all the details.
On the road.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It's a little, I anticipate it being more than a little nuts.
How did that happen? How did that come about?
Oh, the show's really good, and so people want to see it.
I was going to say, as he dialed
up on his phone.
But
that's
you know,
good.
Like Comic-Con, though, you would expect, like, comics. I mean, I guess in a way.
Well, we are, I think it coincides with, so we did a big Kickstarter campaign, and it coincides with the release of our 136-page hardbound graphic novel of Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, and Captain Laserbeam, and Frank and Sadie Doyle, Beyond Belief, all that stuff.
And then also, the Thrilling Adventure Hour scripts, they're all like 80 pages, right? They're like, you guys write it in big type, though, right? So all the actors can read it. Is that true?
It is. It's a little larger, so it's...
If the type's not big enough, actors just walk around and crash into it.
Well, yeah.
That's right. That's right. No, the scripts, I think, are somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 pages, but they are like a 14-point type because we're reading it live on stage. To clarify one thing, we don't write it. Ben Acker and Ben Blacker write it, and they are geniuses.
Yeah, and they're busy guys.
Yeah, they're busy
Where
guys.
Do they find the time? Like, they just keep writing. They just write all the time. Is that...
They're doing a lot of stuff. They just released a Wolverine comic for people that make Wolverine comics.
Marvel.
Marvel. No. That was on the tip of my tongue.
No, you were quizzing me.
And then I was
me.
Like, yes. If I say it wrong...
For Marvel.
No, I was. I thought it was Marvel, and then I thought, if that's DC, I'm going to get crucified.
Yeah, that's true. That wouldn't go well for you.
Right. so they're very busy, and they're always writing lots and lots of stuff, and I think are quite likely going to be staffed on something very, very soon.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were just named as part of the Writers Guild, top, 75 show writers or whatever?
It's not surprising to me. They're really good.
Yeah. It's just kind of surprising to me that they're not staffed on something or have their own show right now.
I'm not in charge of that because they'd be rich and famous by now.
It's so crazy, though, with how popular Thrilling Adventure Hour is. You'd think they would be in hot demand.
Oh, I think they are. I hear on the sets that I'm on, more and more of the producers and executive producers are coming up to me and going, hey, you do that thing that Acker and Blacker.
Right.
Like, that's happening.
Do you feel like Hollywood takes time to catch on to things because this whole city kind of goes at a snail's pace sometimes?
Well, you mentioned that I'm having a good year.
Yeah.
I've been here 12. So, seems like it could pick up the pace a little.
Yeah, right. Do you feel that way about L.A., though, that they move a little slower than every other city?
You're not referring to traffic.
Well, that too.
I don't know. I mean, it's a weird business. From my angle on the business, it's and I suspect it holds for writers and everybody. It's about relationships. It's about time on task and going in front of people, whether it's with your script submissions or your auditions, and having them go, "Hey, you made a lot of. You're really funny. We're looking for a black woman."
Right.
So you're not right, Mark Evan Jackson.
No, I've had that,
But, so then you come in and it's just like sales. They say in sales that it takes 100 calls to get 10 appointments to make one sale.
My favorite thing ever is when I auditioned for something that's on TV now and they said, "You were great. We really want a black guy." I'm like, "Well, thanks for bringing me in."
Yeah.
I was like the only white guy that auditioned. So I thought well, that's interesting. Why'd you even bring me in? Just in case. Just in case.
Just in case you want
to. Someone
have
gets crazy and goes discovered. Another direction.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Something that seems to happen to me quite a bit is that I'll get called in for something, and the character name will be obviously ethnic.
Yeah.
You can't see me on this, but I'm the whitest man in America, and they'll.
Mark will be reading for Rajapur.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually read for. Well, I won't name it, but something that's out very recently, and it was an Indian character, for sure. And, I always go in going like, should I try an accent? Which, of course, would immediately be savagely racist.
Right.
So my question is, do you feel like when people bring you in for things like that, they just want to see you and meet you?
Oh, I don't have any idea, but that's certainly how I treat it.
Yeah.
I don't know what their intention is, but I, you know, to the...
They got to have some intention of bringing in for an Indian role.
Maybe.
Yeah, right. Maybe. I would assume.
I mean, they can, you know, they can... Stranger things have happened,
it's
right?
It's not the NFL. They don't have to bring in a black coach to interview for, you know,
right.
just to make sure.
Right. No, I think it's... It's
a good analogy.
If there were affirmative action, it would be not in my direction.
Right.
I don't think I'm on the quota list. No, I think, but as an actor, you've got to treat it that way and go, I don't care if I'm all the way wrong for this. I would like to go and be funny in front of this casting director again, and or for the first time or what have you.
That's the way you look at it, right? You got to build the net. You got a network.
It's an investment. Yeah.
So let me ask you, when you started out in this business, because you said 12 years and now you're having a hot year. Okay. So let's say the first 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
Obviously, you got to work too to get by or whatever. Or or were you getting enough gigs where you're actually getting by off acting?
No. Early on. I'm married as well, so my wife has a job, which helps. She's not in the industry. She's a veterinarian.
Smart.
Okay, good.
Super smart, by the way.
Smart of you to marry
someone
with a regular job.
In the industry, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm confirming that. No, I'm saying,
yeah, right.
For you actors out there, don't date people in the industry.
Yeah, right.
They will only make you sad.
Yeah.
I know.
It's the worst.
I'm finding that out.
No, early on, I was teaching and directing at Second City and stage managing at the Comedy Central Stage. And before that, it was the HBO Warner Brothers Television Workspace, which is now, I think, the National Comedy.
So at least
Comedy
you were working jobs, though, in the business that you like, things you like,
sure.
Like Second City and Comedy Central.
Or that you were tolerating.
Yeah, no. And you know, I do what other actors do, and that is try to maximize the clubs in my bag. I have a decent career in voice, for commercial voiceover and... for radio and television spots, and then commercial acting as well. Like, that's a nice way to supplement your income.
Yeah, and you've done voice acting, and that gets you that's got to get you a couple bucks.
It is. It's not what people think. Everybody thinks about the trailer guys, the Don LaFontaine's of the world that are so busy they're taking limos from place to place because it takes too long to park. They've got so many things to read. And it's not that, but it's absolutely wise to diversify and not early on you are not. It's not wise to say no to much,
Right.
I mean, I've turned down porn.
Have you really?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, I may believe it.
Say,
I'm not your go-to guy for that.
There's not a lot of go-to guys for that, I feel.
No.
No, I feel they pick out some interesting folks for that.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe they need an improv guy. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Could you...
You are really good at improv.
Maybe they need an Indian
right.
guy.
I hear rumors that guys that are doing guys and girls in improv are really good at sex.
You want me to do what?
Yeah.
Just improv.
Well, it's improv.
Just go with it.
Yeah. Did your wife expect you to be really good at sex because you do improv?
We should get her on the phone. I don't.
Were her expectations high?
I don't know. I pray they've been met.
Yeah. Because I got to feel as an improv guy, I got to feel like I'd be good at it. I don't know.
Really?
I wouldn't know. I'm a virgin. No, I'm
I was
going to
say, you're wondering.
I think I've never gotten reviews. Not so many.
No.
I feel like if you're wondering how you are at sex, you are not great.
Yeah.
You at least have the confidence, right?
You
even
have the confidence.
You suck at it.
Sure.
No, you need to think you're great.
Yeah, but you could be an improver and be really bad at it and think you were great, and that'll do.
Yeah, right.
Because your opinion is
there's a lot of that at Second City.
Right. Yeah.
How did we get here?
I saw no way around it.
Yeah, no. I have a one-track mind. Back to Kings of Summer.
Oh,
we'll go there. We'll go there.
Oh, I like it.
Okay, so let's talk about this film now. When it got a lot of great critical buzz. CBS Films picked it up. Was it from Sundance they picked it up?
They did.
It was Sundance, right?
Yep.
Okay, so CBS Films just opened up their distribution division a few years ago, so they're looking for their first big movie because they haven't really had a big movie or a breakout indie hit. So this is kind of it for them. And so when you got all the buzz and all the critical acclamation, have you been getting phone calls about it? Have people been talking to you? Have people been returning your phone calls?
That is the key. You've got to make phone calls.
Yeah.
I've been getting an awful lot of nice attention in the online and in the press. My role is that of Megan Mullally's husband, and because we have above average chemistry and the scenes are memorable. My name is being mentioned a lot. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
She She's wild, yeah.
I mean, is that kind of like easy for you to act with someone like that, do improv with someone like that? Even if you're having an off day, she probably can carry the load even.
Oh, she can, yeah. Yeah. No, she's, you know, she's wildly energetic and super funny and relentlessly hilarious. Like she's.
When you guys are going to improv together, do you and her, like, talk beforehand? Do you, nothing. You just go right into it.
Yeah. I mean, you, you know, I think we're both doing what we were talking about earlier, which is holding back our cards and waiting to see what gets put out there. She, as a matter of fact, the very first day that I shot with her was a scene in the movie where along a roadside, the kids' cell phones have been tracked to a bus, like a Greyhound-type bus, and we pulled it over on the side of the road. And so that day in Chagrin Falls, Ohio, or wherever we were, right around there, was legitimately 110 degrees. As I said, I had never met Megan before. That was our first day shooting. And it was, you know, it was a low-budget movie, so there were no trailers. They had a 15-passenger van for us that they were blasting the air conditioning in. And when we had a few minutes between takes, we'd go into it. But the second you open the side doors on a 15-passenger van, it's instantly 110 degrees inside that van. So it was, you know, very uncomfortable and whatever. And we were about two takes into us trying to show an artist rendering of what our son might look like now to these bus patrons. And she said, Megan did turn to me before we did this next take and said, when they don't respond, I'm going to try to physically attack these background actors.
Yeah.
Please restrain me. And so, you know, the first day of shooting, I'm physically lifting Megan Mullally off the ground
in 110 degree
heat. 110 degree heat. You know, and she's a very famous stranger that I've, you know, been a fan of for a decade. Like, it was. There are some weird sets of circumstances.
So great.
Yeah. But that's one of the few instances in which she'd, you know, tip me off to something that's going on. Otherwise, she would have straight gotten past me and attacked some background actors.
You know why you're great, though? You're great.
I have a lot of reasons, yeah.
I'll give you why you're great.
Oh, please.
When you, and I've read some of your other interviews you've done for the movie and stuff, and I've read, you know, I'm a fan of your work. We've had you on before. We love you. So, but the thing for me that makes you great is when you come on the show and you discuss what your movies are about or your television shows are about, you really are good at selling it in like a way, though, yeah. Where you make it where it's as funny as it is. It's funny. Oh, it's funny. And that is something a lot of actors, we'll have actors on and I'll say, so, you know, sell these people on your fucking movie.
Right.
And they're like, oh, it's really good.
Yeah, it's good. It's
great. You're good. You got stories. You got great stories.
Oh, thank you. I could talk about me a lot.
That's good.
Yeah.
Now, I know it was low budget, but when CBS Films picked it up, obviously you guys had a premiere then and stuff, right?
We did, yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and how'd that go?
Oh,
nice party?
So much fun. Yeah, it was at the Arclight in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And,
up,
you know,
Vine.
Big fat red carpet and press from all over the globe. And Nick and Megan and the boys were there. And, I mean, it was a proper premiere. You know, directors of other movies came to see it, like sort of Big Beach alumni directors and stuff came to see it. It was really, really cool. It's really fun to see an audience react to this movie because The Kings of Summer truly is relatable to everyone. I mean, it's, you know, male, female, young, old. If you've experienced the childhood on the planet Earth, you will likely enjoy this movie. And my wife and I and Keegan-Michael Key and Mary Beth Monroe from Workaholics and several other of my Detroit friends have created a charity called the Detroit Creativity Project, offering improv instruction in the Detroit public schools.
That's great.
And CBS Films was very cool, and a few weeks ago allowed us to do a charity sneak peek of the movie in Detroit. So Jordan Vogt Roberts, who's from Royal Oak, Michigan, which is just a northern suburb of Detroit, and Eugene Cordero, who's in the movie, who is from Pontiac, Michigan. We all went back for this charity premiere and did a tiny red carpet of our own. And watching that version of the movie, I got to sit right behind my father-in-law and my nephew, his grandson. And so it was really fun to watch, you know, a man in his 70s and a kid who's 17 love this movie.
That's great.
Like, laugh at the same things, laugh at different things. Like, it's...
That's good.
It's a movie that's relatable to a lot of people. If you've ever had a parent with whom you've been frustrated, this movie will speak to you.
I think that charity's great, too. That's
outstanding. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Talk about that more. I'm interested.
It's called the Detroit Creativity Project, and something that my wife and I my wife and I met in Detroit, and when I was at the Second City there, actually right at the end of my tenure there, I had already had plans to move to Los Angeles when we met. And we are fans of Detroit and are rooting for Detroit, and Detroit is a city that can use people to root for it and to help it. And so we were looking for ways to give back to the city of Detroit, a city that, you know, gave me an awful lot. Anybody that you'll find that came out of the Second City there, we really feel like the city offered us a lot of opportunity, and it was just graduate school for comedy and for life. And so my wife and I were looking for ways to give back and thought, how have we not been doing this already? So we have a lot of people that we've taught to improvise in Detroit, a lot of my friends, and so there's the infrastructure exists for all of that to happen. So we began offering improv in the Detroit public schools. A woman I was in the cast with named Margaret Edwardowski, I was in the Second City cast with her. She's now the director of arts at Y Arts Detroit at the YMCA. So they have all the relationships in place and all the outreach. And so we've been raising money steadily, and now we're in, I think, 7 schools total and a year and a half in, and have applied for a grant from the Night Arts Foundation, and with hope that'll come through. And we call it the Detroit Creativity Project and not the Detroit Improv Project, because in success, what we'd love to do is
have other things.
We'd love to send people into schools to teach visual arts, to teach filmmaking, to teach fashion.
Plus, when you're in school and you take improv, I mean, when you're that young, that could lead to other things, too.
It really can.
It doesn't mean you're going to be an improv artist, but it could make you go, I want to be a writer.
It could make you do anything.
I want to be a director. Whatever.
I tell you what, the skills involved in improv, which are listening and accepting and being a team player, and, you know, it's about respect and energy. Boy, are they great on the stage, but man, are they awesome off the stage.
I agree.
They make you a better human being. They make you more interested, more interesting, and they can help with life. So, you know, obviously one very practical correlation here is not, you know, we're not seeking to make actors or comedians or anything, but we are really hoping to give people the skills to apply for jobs, to, you know, apply for colleges, and to make them just more confident and a little bit more fearless. You know, so much of the world these days, I think, is about being the one with all the answers and being the toughest one. And improv is a world where everybody starts from zero and nobody knows anything. We're creating this from nothing.
Yeah.
And it's some really great life skill.
That works. Now you have so many people taking improv classes so that they can just be more sociable. Give presentations.
Oh, sure.
And things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't have anything to do with wanting to be a performer.
It breeds such a great confidence and fearlessness. Everyone should take an improv
Chicago,
class.
In Chicago, I know there's a lot of businesses that send their employees to Second City.
Absolutely.
And I.O. And just to
see, I'd be worried that they would not want to come back.
Yeah.
To work.
They'd want
to work
some other job. Or stay here and crack ice, apparently.
When I did my classes at Second City, before I was in Second City, I did the classes there. And I would have guys coming in and girls coming in that were, you know, part of some company. And they got sent there by their company. And I will tell you, a lot of them were tempted to leave.
Go back to an office?
They were tempted to leave.
Fuck that shit.
They were tempted to leave.
By the way, you can swear and name brand names on this show.
Yes. Well,
Corona Light.
Yeah, Corona.
I don't drink light.
Oh.
So
Corona Extra.
Yeah. So, you know what film I think, if you love this film, you'll love Kings of Summer, is what I was going to say. Mud.
Interesting.
If you love Mud, this is a film that you could have a double bill with, and I think it's all about childhood.
Yeah,
and I think it's really important to make these kind of films still.
Oh, thank you. People are pointing to that. People are pointing to Stand By Me.
Yeah.
People are pointing to Goonies, Moonrise Kingdom. A friend of mine even referred to it as akin to Beasts of the Southern Wild, but no beasts and not in the Southern.
That's good. That's good. It's just wild. Okay.
Just wild.
That's good. That's very, very good. What else you got to promote? I know I only got you for 30.
I got some stuff coming up. I'm doing stuff on Key and Peele. I'm doing stuff on Kroll, a lot of Comedy Central stuff. Yeah. I just shot a project that I think won't be out until probably Sundance-ish next year. But it is, I don't know if you ever saw a film called Casa de mi Padre.
Yes.
But it was a Spanish language Western with Will
with
Ferrell.
With Will Ferrell,
The director of that and the writer of that, Matt Piedmont and Andrew Steele, the Funny or Die people, are doing for IFC an epic miniseries called The Spoils of Babylon, and it stars
Will Ferrell
as the author of this, you know, epic giant Michener novels. And then it's Tobey Maguire and Kristen Wiig and Tim Robbins, and pretty great. A bunch of unbelievable cameos. and at least one super believable cameo, which is me.
That's great. So you're going to be doing that. That's great. Yeah. And that's going to come out next year?
I think so. It's IFC, so it'll either be fall or spring, I think. Yeah.
Good for Dan Pastrnak. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a great project.
Yeah,
our buddy.
Great dude.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He is great. That's a great project. He's a really nice guy.
I met him on set. He's wonderful.
And he would be on set. I mean, he loves comedy so much.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a great project like that, he is all about it. He is one of the most not hands-on like executives, but like he'll be there.
He
will, and he's fun.
Yep.
He's not there to criticize and bullshit. He's there. He's there just to experience it. He's like a kid in the candy store. He's great,
which provides a great environment on set.
It's great,
because it's you're just thrilled to be at work. The director even said to me at one point, Matt Piedmont's a friend as well, and he at one point we were shooting, and he said like, "Can you believe this is what we do for a living?
I know,
this
great.
Is fantastic."
Yeah. Not only if IFC had money.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
That would be, if people think Comedy Central's cheap. No.
No.
Mark, thank you so much.
Guys,
for coming
thank you.
Back on.
Yes.
Thrilling Adventure Hour. When's the next one?
I think we're taking July off because we are going to Comic-Con.
You're doing
good at
Comic-Con. Yeah.
Tickets are available, so check out the thrillingadventurehour.com website. And then we're back at Largo for our normal thing that we've been doing for eight and a half years come August.
You still hang out with that Sam Levine character?
I know that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to do, I imagine you'll make it to a 10th year. Are you going to do some kind of big 10th year thing for that?
I think so.
You got to.
I mean, they got big gifts, right? They should get us all My Box or something.
Yeah, right.
Something.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Yep.
Kings
Guys,
of Summer in theaters now. Check it out. It's a great flick. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're the best, buddy.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a small break, and we'll be right back with David Rodriguez, and we will be talking about his film. So we got a lot of indie film talk going on today.
We got to make time for some nonsense, though.
I got to find some Hall & Oates to play, though.
Oh, God. You just played Hall & Oates. Will you just play something else?
We can't go for that. Enough of that, too. All right. That was Mark Kevin Jackson. He's great.
He's great.
Every time he's on, he's just so cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Suave.
He's suave.
He's poured into that cardigan.
For a funny guy.
Yeah.
You know, was he golfing today?
Was he?
That had to be his golf outfit. Well, it wasn't his fishing outfit.
He wasn't wearing golf shoes. He's a guy that'll play tiddlywinks with you, I feel.
Tiddlywinks?
Yeah. Or cribbage.
Or, oh, I was hoping you were going to say, like, barrel of monkeys.
Barrel of monkeys. No, hungry, hungry hippos. That's my game.
Hungry, hungry hippos? That was your game?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I mean, I liked it. I was a barrel of monkeys guy.
Yeah.
What else did I do? What other games did you play? Operation.
Operation we never had.
Really?
We played...
You didn't want to keep buying the batteries.
We had Monopoly Junior growing up, which was like a kid.
I know.
Which was good.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
was good.
It was all like dollars and like $5.
Yeah.
You know, there was no $500.
It was translatable for kids.
Right. It was teaching kids you don't need to be wealthy.
No, we had a great game called Don't Break the Ice. And you had, it was like a plastic platform.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And you had to use a little mallet and
that's
hit
right.
the ice cubes down without it, all the ice cubes.
I remember that.
It
that's
was like
crazy.
Jenga. It was horizontal Jenga. It was fantastic.
You know
game.
When I
Simple.
Knew I started getting, like, ambitious is when I was in, like, oh, I want to say it was, like, 7th or 8th grade, I started playing the Game of Life.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah. That's when I started to be like Donnie Trump. You know, I'm sitting there wondering when am I going to get the car and the girl. That was The Sims before The Sims.
Life?
We
yeah.
didn't need The Sims. We had Life.
Yeah, Life was tough.
That was a good game. It yeah. was tough.
Yeah.
You know what was the worst?
What?
Chutes and fucking Ladders.
Oh, Chutes and Ladders. I took
it
a beating.
It would never end.
I'll tell you, I could never win at Candyland. I'd always be stuck in
Candyland.
The goddamn molasses swamp.
If my mother was on the phone right now, she'd tell you that was my favorite game of
yeah.
all time. Which, she'd probably be right. But yeah, that game, you know, you used to have to do things to win at games.
Yeah, you used to have to do things.
No, now you don't have to
win
anymore.
Now it's just you have to build the mousetrap.
What a great game that was.
Mousetrap.
That was the craziest.
Well, the thing with that is, I mean, they went,
taught you physics.
It taught you physics. Yeah, right. Well, I was in love with that kind of thing, like the Rube Goldberg machine. I
yeah.
loved that. But the game, there wasn't much to it except for the trap itself. I would just build the trap for fun. I wouldn't even play the game.
Oh, man. You know what? In a couple minutes, we're going to have on David Rodriguez. He's the writer-director of this new film with Paul Sorvino and Michael Rapaport and a buddy of ours, Chaz Palminteri, and just a great film called Last I Heard.
Yeah, it's a very good movie.
Wow, did that shock the shit out of me. I mean, I thought it was going to be one thing, and it's totally... It's just such
not what you expected in the best way.
No, I mean, and by the way, just because I say I'm shocked, it didn't mean it wasn't going to be great the other way either. It's about Italians. It stars Paul Sorvino and Michael Rapaport and Chaz Palminteri. So you think automatically mob movie, and there's a little, but no, it's about family, and it is the best film I've seen. I'll talk about it when David's done, but
yeah, well.
But it's the best film I've seen about the Italian culture in America in a long time, and I'm very excited to talk about it. And then of course Kings of Summer, and I, you know, that's got a cast and a half, and
yeah.
Mark's great. You gotta check that movie out. It's in theaters now, and
yeah.
it's got rave reviews. I'm telling you, go see that and go see Mud.
It's only at the Arclight right now, though. So.
Right, but do the twofer. Do that and then do Mud.
I've seen Mud.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm saying to our listeners.
Yeah. Oh,
do
yeah.
that and do Mud.
Right.
Mud was great.
It's great. I think it's one of the best screenplays this year.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
think it's outstanding.
A lot of things are great.
So, yeah, that's what's going on there. What else is going on? You got a gig on Sunday, Groundlings?
Yeah, well, it's tentative. It might not be this Sunday. It's going to be, yes, at Groundlings. They do a show there where they'll have on a comic, and they'll have them do, I don't know, 5 minutes, 8 minutes. And then an improv group comes on, and they do a sketch based on your material. They make a sketch out of your material. And it's like they keep doing that, and it's always a different group. It's always a different improv group doing each one for the different
sure.
comic. But if it's based off of stand-up, I imagine all the sketches are just about masturbation.
Well, at least your stand-up.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yes.
But that's kind of an interesting thing. I don't know. Improv can be very look-alike, a lot of things. That just people have seen all the tricks, you know. You have to think
right.
of new things. I don't think it... can offer as many surprise. Let me put it this way. I don't think there's as much potential for offering surprises as with stand-up.
Sure.
But this is kind of a neat idea, and I'll be interested to see what they do with it. I'm not positive it's going to even be this Sunday. The guy's locked me in, but it might be the Sunday after this one. But that'll be at Groundlings. It starts at 8 is the show, and it's free. It's a free show. So,
let's see what happened. I went to Chicago this week, and I had a wedding. Congratulations, Vic and Jackie Bonprezzi. Fantastic. I saw Lenny and Mikey and Chucky and who else did I see? Giuliano, Anthony. We had a great time. Luisi, I saw for a day. Yeah, a real nice time. You know, I hate to. This is going to become a running theme on this show, and it's gonna suck. So last week, I was bitching about how I can't eat anything at Taste other than the salad.
You know,
so I go home
to
Chicago. Portillo's, Lou's,
I did the same thing.
Armine's, Gibson's. Can't eat my usual.
No, it was bad.
Doggy Diner. Get a Euro. I can't eat my usual.
I was back.
I was so sad.
I was back. I was back 9 days.
Oh, you ate like a pig. I couldn't do Superdog.
I went to Superdog.
Nope.
I went to Paradise Pup with my mom.
Love it. The best.
I went to Steak and Shake.
You gained 10 pounds in a week.
And I went to Bona.
Oh, God bless.
I mean, I went out of control. I was out of control.
That's great.
Not to mention I had a lot of rich, expensive dinners.
That sounds like one day with Terzo.
People took me out. Yeah, right. Yeah, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a late night snack. No, because people took me out for my birthday, so I was going to Greek restaurants and every... Man, I went nuts.
That's great.
Yeah.
By the way,
I don't give a shit.
Go Blackhawks tonight?
Yes.
And I know a lot of people are probably going to be listening to this the game.
That's tomorrow or that's today?
Today.
What kind of fan
tonight.
Am I? All right.
It's tonight.
Great.
Where are you going to go? Tin Horn or something?
I went to Tin Horn the last few times.
Why don't you come here?
I might just go here. Well, I was going to go
to Chicago.
Do something else tonight, though.
This place is going to be rocking for the
Hawks.
It's
going to be rocking, yeah.
This thing's going to be rocking. It starts in 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Really? Where the fuck starts a game at 5 o'clock?
All right. I know what we want to happen. What do we think is going to happen?
Well, I already told you this.
Yeah.
And if I say it's on the air, I'm going to lose.
Are we
going to
get a lot of shit because we think that
Listen,
Boston's
I just
take
think
it.
The Bruins are too good, and
yeah.
I think they win in six.
Yeah.
And that's being nice six.
Yeah.
I kind of think five.
I think five. I don't think it'll be less than that.
But you know what? I would love to be wrong.
I would love to be wrong.
I would love to be the most wrong guy ever.
Sorry.
No, it's, you know, it's... Hopefully Joe's not listening to the show.
Yeah.
Hopefully Montana's not listening. He won't be happy with
that. He won't be happy with that.
He won't be happy with those predictions.
Well, no. Let me tell you something. Doubting your team every step of the way is a very Chicago sports fan thing to do.
It is. It is.
They showed – I remember when they first brought in Cutler, and the first regular season game they lost, and they cut to a shot of a fan throwing his Cutler jersey in the garbage. The first game.
Oh, I remember that.
That's a Chicago sports fan for you.
No, I remember that. That was funny. And then they burned the jersey the one time too.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, I should have some news to announce, by the way, in the next week or so. So that'll be good. Maybe 2 weeks.
What are you getting married?
No, business stuff.
Oh yeah.
Dine and Dash stuff. Dine and Dash is doing well.
Yeah.
We'll keep you updated. I should know something in the next couple months.
Doing well for a show that's not on TV.
Yeah, right. Right. It's doing really
it's
well.
Doing great.
It's doing really well. Hey, okay. Now I'm excited. Now I can stop stalling. No.
Not stalling.
I was stalling. Oh, I was doing small talk right there.
Oh, well,
that wasn't a segment.
That was
announcements. Small talk.
That was announcements.
That was announcements.
That you needed to do.
That's true. Announcements. David Rodriguez.
How
director
are you,
and writer of Last I Heard and producer and, you know, all the hats.
All of it.
Listen, brother, I got to tell you something. I mean, this film's amazing.
Thank you, man.
It's great.
I appreciate it.
Really I got to tell you something. I didn't get any press notes on it or anything. Maybe Pat didn't send them to me. Doesn't matter. I'm glad I didn't have to read anything because I went into this film. You got Paul Sorvino. You got Michael Rapaport. Chaz Palminteri, who's been on the show, he's in an early scene, and
great
we
guy.
Love Chaz.
Yeah.
Great. Oh, the best. Isn't he the nicest
sweetheart?
Guy?
Yeah.
So I'm like, before I watch this, I'm like, all right, we got ourselves another mob movie here. One of those, you know, low-budget mob movies. And I go, yeah, it could still be great, but, you know, low-budget mob movie. I watch this thing. First of all, thank you. This is the most real portrayal of the Italian-American lifestyle in America that I've seen in a long time.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it shocked me in a great way. Like, I was so appreciative of this film. I think it's fantastic, really.
Yeah.
Thanks, from me, man, to you. So last I heard, I'm telling you people, you got to see this movie. Especially, and we have a bunch of Italians that listen to the show, big Chicago fan base.
We got to bring it to Chicago.
You've got to see this movie.
Yeah.
You've got to see this movie. It's so, so good. You premiered last week at the Seattle International Film Festival, right?
Yeah, just this past Saturday.
Yeah.
Man.
How was it? I mean, it was well received and all that. You had a nice turnout.
It was great, man. I got to tell you. I mean, we were, first of all, we didn't promote it at all. We got there Thursday. We premiered Saturday at 6 o'clock. And we thought maybe there'll be 100 people.
Yeah.
You know, we were shocked. We walked in the theater. It was packed.
That's great. Yeah.
There wasn't an extra seat in the house. People laughed. People cried. People gasped. It was a really cool cool response. And then they actually Skyped in Sorvino.
Oh, that's cool. Great.
So he was on the big screen. And
that
was
pretty
neat. You
won't leave New York, that guy. No, that's great.
And
it's for his voice. He sings, you know.
That's right.
He can't leave.
Ever since Repo, he's got the voice.
Oh, no, before that. He's been doing opera.
He's a classically trained opera singer.
For years.
He's a Renaissance man. He'll let you know about it.
Yeah.
but no, it was great. I mean, we had probably 80% of the people on both days, Saturday and Sunday, stay for the Q&A. It was amazing, man. I was overwhelmed.
How thrilling is that?
It was cool. You know, because you never know. Like, with this kind of movie, it's kind of like when people saw The Godfather Part 3, and they're like, we don't want to see Michael Corleone like that. You know,
right.
We don't want him to be vulnerable.
Sure.
So there's that fear of going into it, you know, going into a post-mafia movie, if you will.
Sure.
You know, and seeing
the
guys.
It was refreshing for me.
Well, it's the way. You know, these guys come home from prison.
I know those
guys. They've
got
nothing. They've got no money, no driver's license.
Both of us know those people or those types of people.
Yeah,
I mean, Matt knows them.
In Chicago.
I grew up in a neighborhood called the Valley, which was about a mile south west of the Loop, which was an Italian neighborhood when I was growing up. And my mom knew some of those guys and went out with some of those guys. And they were all there. We used to eat where they hung out. And that's totally the world that I know.
And there was not a moment of this film that didn't speak true.
Yeah.
And as an Italian American, I could tell you that flat out. From the neighborhoods to the way that they talked. I mean, here's why I'm so impressed with you. It's not only well directed, and it's a great project, so congrats on producing it.
Thanks.
You wrote a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, a great movie.
Thank you, man.
Where did this come from for you?
Well, you know, it's. I'm actually well rehearsed right now with that with that question, but it was a two part thing. This is my third feature.
Because some Italians are sitting at home going, Rodriguez wrote this.
Well, I grew up around those guys,
right,
and I knew it very, very intimately. But it's a two part answer to your question. I did two features before that, Push and American Bully, and they were both, you know.
American Bully was so well received.
It was well received. But you know, it had, you know, the audience the size of the head of a pin. You know, it was very political. It was
it was
heavy. It was, it was just it wasn't an easy movie to watch. Then I wanted to make a movie that was undeniably my film. You know, something that nobody can dispute. No one can say, well, they wouldn't say it like that, or they wouldn't do that, or they wouldn't behave that way, because I know, just like Pluto.
Right.
And then I was watching, I don't know if you guys remember the Jack Falcone, the Cuban guy, the heavyset Cuban guy that infiltrated the Gambinos as an Italian.
They're actually
making a movie about it called Making Jack Falcone.
Oh, are they?
And Soderbergh is executive producer.
Huh.
And I'm pitching myself right now on your show for that.
Good luck
with
that
directing.
Well, you just show them the movie. You can pitch it.
Yeah.
But I watched it, and this Jack Falcone guy says, well, I was watching this one guy come home after 8 years, and he's trying to reclaim his rackets, and it was pitiful.
No, it's sad.
And as soon as he said that word, I said, wait a minute, man. There's something here. There's a character here that we can make a movie about. And that was it, man. I
so
got
damn
a 5x7 memo card, and I started jotting down notes. And 2 weeks later, I had the first draft.
Let me
of
tell
script.
You what's great. There is a scene in this film where it sums up everything you just said, and I just loved it. When Rappaport is at Paul Sorvino's house, Mr. Joe, and Rappaport's at Mr. Joe's house, and Mr. Joe, this is a turning point in the movie, so I don't want to ruin it too much, but Mr. Joe is talking to Rappaport in no longer a neighborly fashion, and Rappaport just says, "You're an old man. You're not that guy."
Yeah,
right.
And it was such a good scene. Like, it was like, man, I've said that to some of these old timers, or I've wanted to say it.
Yeah.
That's the thing I love about Rappaport's character in this movie, too. He's got some balls. He's not written as a stereotypical, just because he's not connected, he's ballless, whatever. He's got balls. He doesn't give a shit about this shit no more.
Well, and I just like you avoided so many pitfalls of these kinds of movies. I feel like any time someone wants to make a movie about the mafia, the Italian, but they have to set it in 1962.
Right.
There has to be a wild Joe Pesci character and a lot of wild dialogue. I feel like they take all these elements from like Scorsese movies, but they take only the surface elements. They don't take the deeper elements.
Yeah.
They do the words, but not the music.
Well, that's, you know, like, and I appreciate you guys appreciating the film. And, any bad reviews I'm going to send your way so you can set those guys
straight. Please do. I will set them all straight because I don't know anything about the culture.
Bob. Going back to Bobby, you know, Bobby's the kind of guy who's got a family, you know, and I'm not going to mess around, man. I'm not going to get myself in trouble because you want me to do favors for you that are going to get you in trouble.
Right.
Sort of the undercurrent of the film is about respect, and it's about family, and it's about that never goes away, regardless of how withered the organized crime is. Family and respect is always there,
right.
You know, and that was the undercurrent of the film.
Let me ask you this. You got maybe the best performances I've seen in like 10 years out of Sorvino and Rappaport, and they're great actors. They're great actors. So I think a lot of it has to do with the script, which is another congratulations to you, because an actor's only as good as the words.
Yeah, as a
But, I mean, what was it like to prep guys like Sorvino and Rappaport, and did you just let them play? You know who else is great in this? Is Paul Benvictor, who I know you've worked with before.
Yeah, he's one of my
what
best friends.
What a great
friends. Yeah.
actor.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
He's the fucking best, man.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, he plays a bad guy in every movie. It was great to see him play just some employee at the deli, schmucky kind of guy.
Right.
It was great to see that. It was great to see that. But tell me about working with Sorvino and Rappaport, because these guys give their two best performances in a long, long time. It's great.
Well, you know, working with Sorvino is a lesson in and of itself. I mean, it's... you've got to trust the guy with that much experience. And I remember early on him telling me we were prepping, and I'm driving around and he calls me and I'm driving around with my DP John Barr, very talented guy. Also,
it looks great. The film looks great.
Thanks,
so
man.
Good for him.
Yeah. Also one of my dear friends. And Sorvino calls and he says, "Dave," he goes, I got a request. I'm like, "All right, what is it?" He goes, "I need 30 to 45 minutes at the beginning of every day to rehearse." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's probably not going to happen, man. We don't have that much money." You know, we shot this movie in 18 days.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Yeah, I don't know." He's like, "Trust me, trust me, trust me. It's going to help you." Fast forward, we start shooting. The guy walks on set.
Now, does he have everyone rehearse with them, or is it just by himself?
Just the actors.
Okay.
Just whoever he's acting with, myself, the DP, and the first.
Yeah, sure.
And he goes for it, you know, and they work through the lines, and he did it for maybe 20 minutes. And I kid you not, it was the best thing I ever did, because that was the routine every day. We had 12-hour days. We were finished early every day, with the exception of one day. We went over a little bit, and that was because some gear got lost in another truck and whatnot, but 17 out of the 18 days that were scheduled for 12 hours, we were done in 8 hours, 9 hours. I mean, at the end of the schedule, we were looking for stuff to tack on to the day just because we were done too early.
No, this is a performance that needs to be seen. Sorvino's great.
Yeah, he's great.
He's great.
And Mike is great. I mean, Mike, Mike's
he's one of my favorites anyway.
I like him a lot.
Mike's process is a lot more, he's just kind of like, he connected with the character so much so that I think it was easy for him to kind of get into it. And then also there's an ease that comes with working with Sorvino.
Yeah.
He carries you. He wants the other actors to be amazing so that he can look amazing, and he's very giving.
Thank you for thinking of Rappaport to go back to playing a street guy, a guy from the neighborhood. He is the best in those roles.
Yeah.
He's great in those roles.
Made for him.
Yeah, he's great. Thank you for making a New York film in New York about New York. I don't know, David, we've had so many guests on this show where I've talked to them and I'm like, you made a New York film with all L.A. actors. Let me tell you my latest that was a big problem for me. See this Die Hard 5?
Yeah.
Okay. McClane's son in the film. This is a Jersey guy, right? McClane. No, New York, Jersey guy, right?
Sure.
The guy they cast, J. Michael Courtney, fine. He's a good actor, whatever. He's Australian. There's not one guy in New York or Jersey that can play McClane's son. Not one. Come on, right?
But that's
right. Isn't that bullshit, though?
Yeah. I mean, look, I casted the film. I had no casting director. I had relationships with pretty much everybody. And I casted it that way because I knew that everybody in their respective roles would be able to bring something to the table special. Just because they're from there and they know the nuances. You know, it's like being from Chicago, being from Philly, being from New York. It's not about the accent. It's about an attitude. And it's about how you carry yourself, and it's about the things that you say and how you say them, and less about forget about it. You know what I mean? And that's not what being a New Yorker is about. You know?
I wanted to say Sorvino's in Chicago right now.
Yeah, he's doing a movie there.
Yeah, and Pat Tobias sent me, our producer Patty sent me, he was watching Windy City Live, and Paul said, he brought up Last I Heard, and he said he had a wonderful time making the film, and he really hopes it finds a big release. And I got to tell you, he should have, because this is Paul Sorvino's, this is a great performance.
Yeah, we're going to try to – I'm glad my executive producer, Chris Kelly, who's a great guy and real supporter of my creative vision and the overall creative vision of the film. He was up at the Seattle Festival, and he saw the audience response, and we really feel like this deserves a theatrical release.
It does.
And we want to try to get – Sorvino some acclaim for this role because it deserves it, man. I mean, it really does.
You know, they did the film The Iceman. It came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Michael Shannon.
Uh-huh. You know, a good movie. It's not bad.
It's pretty good.
But this is a real New York movie. This deserves that same type of release.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's that good. It just is. It's so great.
We just want everybody to blog about it, talk about it.
I can watch you make films inside Italian delis the rest of my life.
Yeah, right.
Okay?
Place entirely at the deli.
Yeah, entirely. You could do a whole. Well, you know, you could do a whole TV show with those characters.
Yeah, they were great.
It's great.
And how about roast beef?
Oh, it's great. It's great.
He's funny.
He's great.
Great
he's
guy.
Great.
You know, resurrected
when
from good
when they're talking colors. About how when they're talking about how he walked. You live like 2 minutes away. Talking about how he walks every day. I was dying. That's a great scene. Is there improv in that movie, or do they're really just delivering it that well?
It was. I'd say that everybody added a little bit of their own thing, but it was probably 80-85% on book.
That is so great.
That's interesting.
That's great acting.
Because you took, I can tell you took great pains to make the conversation sound like the way real people actually talk.
Right, which is sometimes hard to act.
Where people are talking over each other, two people are talking at once, a lot of small talk, you know, just, you know.
You nailed it. That's exactly right.
It's something
exactly
that I very much appreciate.
Well, great writers are great listeners, you know what I mean? And you just got to listen. You got to listen to the people around you, how they talk. And
I'm so impressed with the acting because sometimes you get a lot of guys who write really well and really, real street talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they can't always deliver it. Man, these guys nailed it. I thought some of it was improv. I'm like, most of this has to be improv because it's so good. It's so good. It's so natural and it's so real. Yep. That's how well written it was.
Thanks,
good
man.
For you, man.
Yep.
Man, That's great. I was so fucking impressed when I saw this movie. I was so happy. Joe Mantegna, Arlene Mantegna here at Taste Chicago, This is something Joe should see. Joe would
yeah,
love it.
I'd love
Joe would
to
love
it.
It.
Yeah.
I'll mention it to him.
Yeah, please
I'll
do.
I'll mention it to
please
him.
Please do. We're going to actually do an L.A. screening.
Are you?
I believe on June 26th.
Oh, I'd love
cool.
to be there for that.
Which is like around 7:30.
I'd love to come
yeah,
to that.
So we want to get a good crowd in there. And,
sure.
And,
where are you guys going to do it at, you know?
I'm not sure yet. Probably somewhere in Beverly Hills just – because it's
sure,
going to be
sure,
for
sure.
the industry as well. So
sure. Oh no, yeah, you got to do one of them industry screenings.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I get invited.
Sometimes we go
sometimes
to those.
They don't
I
want
love
me
you
to
guys
go to
be
those.
There.
Yeah,
I want to see it on
great.
The big screen.
Yeah.
That'd be great for me.
That would be great.
That'd be great yeah. for me because yeah. I had to watch it at home on the TV, and I'm like,
Beverly Hills is in his discomfort zone. Though,
it is, but I'll go for this.
It's in my discomfort zone. I'm all the way up in Topanga.
Thank you.
Oh yeah.
Good for you. Yeah, you're. So you're kind of a valley guy too.
I prefer not,
not
to be
valley,
considered
but,
a valley guy.
Well, right, but you're not a big other side of the hill
I'm
guy.
I'm a quasi guy. You know?
Well, you're
right,
hanging,
me too.
I'm
right, right, right.
Well, we're all hanging on to our accents.
I'm not a big West yeah. Hollywood, Beverly Hills guy. Or,
we're Chicago
you know,
guys.
Well, I never. I'm behind the camera, so I've never had to work on getting rid of my accent.
No, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not getting rid of mine. That's
don't. It communicates to people that you're forceful.
Right. Yeah, there we go. That's what you want.
Yeah.
That's what you want. I mean, I got to tell you, doing Piven Theater all the years I did Piven, like, when I'm watching this movie, and I know I'm watching a great movie when I say this. I'm watching this movie, I go, I would have loved to act it in this movie.
Right.
Most movies I watch, I really don't say it, because I always grew up wanting to be a character actor, not right. a star. Not so I always wanted to just do the best movies.
Yeah.
And when I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, man, I would have died to be in this. It's
next
that
one.
Good. It's
next
that
one.
Good. No, but it's that good. That and that's my compliment to you is it's just like this movie is an actor's dream. And I think the next project you do, any actor that sees this movie is going to want to do it.
Yeah.
I hope so.
It's great. It's
I hope
great.
So
tell me more about let me ask you about this. What a curveball. What a great topic. And what a real way to deal with it. The relationship between Paul and his daughter.
Don't give it away.
I'm not going to give it away. But where did you come up with it? And how did you know how to write it so real?
Well, you know, when I was that part actually came along later in the process of writing the first draft.
Sure.
And I'm in the kitchen and I'm thinking about it. And I don't know what the hell I was doing in the kitchen, but all of a sudden I said, wait a minute, I got an idea. That's it.
Now I am wondering
shit.
What you were doing
so
in the kitchen
yeah,
when
exactly.
they.
I was doing the dishes, you know, and no, but yeah, I ran in, I wrote it, and I didn't. It couldn't be short.
Yeah,
because it's a pretty long scene.
No,
and you just can't like.
And it's not something you just like glance over and then you don't talk
well,
about
look,
the
I mean,
rest
you guys,
of the film.
Any Italian,
this is a big twist for Italians.
Is going to skate around,
right? For Italians, I'm not going to ruin this twist, but for Italians. About 30 minutes into this movie, bam, and like you're going to be thinking of your parents, and you're going to be thinking of your situations, and you're going to be going,
right. And I think that was the actress that played Rita Renee Props is just so talented, and she came so prepared to do that role, and she played it
Renee
so
Props
well.
Was great.
And
she's
so
really,
subtly,
really good.
Yeah. It was scary.
She's really,
you remember her
really
from,
good.
She was Lois Lane in
yes.
Seinfeld.
Yes,
and
that's right.
She was Nikki, the girl with the hairy
she's
armpits.
She's really,
Get
really
Shorty.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, Nikki, that's right.
Yeah,
right.
Beatles girlfriend.
What a great
yeah.
fucking movie, Get Shorty.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a great movie.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
That was a lot of fun.
That's like my favorite movie, Get Shorty. I've seen that like 1,000 times.
Oh,
no
so
shit.
You've seen her armpits 1,000
yes,
times.
Yes, I have.
Right.
I have. So you're taking this to Italy?
Well, we got into Taormina.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not they're going to screen it there because they wanted Chaz or Paul to,
sure.
to go there, and they're both not available. Chaz is doing some master class, and
that's
I think he's doing a Bronx Tale also.
Oh, the
and
in
then
New York.
Over the summer, Chaz teaches a acting school.
Yeah.
He has like an acting 2-week seminar that they have at like some kind of like. Hotel or something, some beach hotel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole thing.
Chaz got to be by the beach.
Got to get
when
his
he,
vacation and his work.
To act.
Yeah, of course.
Oh no, he's amazing. So you're doing, you're it's going to Italy. You think
to Sicily? Yeah,
to
Taormina. Oh,
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Sorvino
we
plays
there.
A Sicilian in the film.
We won't be there, but you know, we'll see what the
just
what
to
the
have
response
it there.
Is.
Great.
Yeah.
And then you're also doing Outfest as well.
We're not going to do Outfest.
You're not doing
We're
it.
Not going to do Outfest.
No.
No.
Pat Tobias, you give me bad notes. You cack sucker.
We were supposed to do Outfest, it was not gay enough.
Really?
So,
oh,
you know, that's another topic for another show.
Another day, because
I gotta
would
tell
be
you
really,
something. I gotta yeah. tell you something. I don't know what it is with the gay community where things got to be gay enough.
Right.
Isn't a little gay enough?
Right.
Isn't some gay enough?
Right.
Whatever.
Well, nobody ever uses the term half a gay.
Right.
They use,
you're either,
they
yeah.
use the other one.
You I know, love that, I love that line that you used in the movie with, rap, where Sorvino says to Rapport, you can't be half pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a street guy's thing. What do you think? You could be half pregnant?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's great. That's great. So, I mean, this is a great film. I mean, this is one of those films where if you put this in some people's hands, you got a next great project going. And I know you do TV, too.
Why don't you sell it for me?
Brother,
you should just sell it.
I love
you.
This film okay. so much. I would.
We're gonna need
I
some
would.
Kind of compensation.
Tell me about it. Yeah, right.
We'll make
you
an offer.
Freebies going on.
Yeah,
yeah. you've done some television projects too. A couple pilots.
I wrote.
Right?
Yeah, I've written some TV. I did a pilot presentation called The Blue Wall.
Yeah.
And I actually have
Carlos Bernard, right?
Yeah, he was in that.
Yeah, he's great.
Yep.
24.
Yeah, good yeah. guy. Talented guy. And I recently wrote a pilot called Whacked, based in New York. I won't say too much about it, but
so that's something you're gonna be shopping
it's
now.
It's something that I wanna try to get made into a series, and then
that's great.
We're out with a reality based procedural right now called The Street Attorney about this organized crime lawyer in New York, Gerard Maroney,
and
we're gonna kind of profile his life and. He's got a very interesting background. He got shot early on and,
yeah.
you know, has a bullet lodged in his back still and walks with a cane. So we're gonna profile
That's
him.
Great.
Young guy, young, good-looking guy.
Let me ask you about reality.
Sure. Because
I'm in a situation right now where I'm going to make an announcement on this in the next week or two, but I'm going somewhere and they want me to do some reality-based stuff. Now you grew up probably like I did, where you know we watched The Godfather and Goodfellas
yeah.
and Casino. We never thought in a million years of doing reality, right?
Right?
So what went through your mind that you decided to do a reality project?
Well, I think it was I'm like you. I mean, I would never dream of doing anything like Jersey Shore or Mob Wives
sure.
or anything like that. It's just not what I'm into.
No. You don't even watch Mob Wives or Jersey Shore?
Not Jersey Shore.
You've seen Big Ange.
But Mob Wives is hysterical. And
every time I go to Tan, people are like, don't come back looking like Big Ange.
Those women are animals.
Yeah, I mean, right. They're
awful. They're savages. Yeah. But they're fun to watch. But anyway, you know, Gerard's story is a serious one.
Yeah.
And it's he's an incredibly talented lawyer. And he's got a great story to tell, you know,
and
to be a guy from the streets representing, you know, organized crime guys still to this day. I think it's a very it's a compelling story. And
now, is that a show you're shopping or has been picked up?
No, we're shopping it as we speak.
As we speak.
As we speak.
That's great.
Yeah.
And you're feeling good about that.
I feel very good about
that's
it.
That's great. That sounds like a great show, actually.
Looking forward to it.
You know, that's the thing. It's like, so how do you come up with reality ideas? Now, is this a well you're going to maybe go back to, or is it just it's got to be the right person, the right story, and you know?
You never know, man. I mean, like, after I made my first movie, you know, everybody said, oh, you're going to get another movie off of that. And then I made my second one, and yeah, you're going to get a big movie after that. Right. And then it didn't happen. And then I made Last I Heard, and I'm very confident in the film.
Right.
And I kind of have this new mantra now where, you know, expect nothing and be open to everything.
Right,
right.
You know, and that's kind of what I'm living by right now.
I
don't know what's going to come
feel.
Of it.
You started with Push, and then this is your third movie. Usually it kind of goes the opposite direction. I mean, you get sort of these sort of giant projects. And,
yeah.
And but you're kind of lucky because you get to go now to things that are more personal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, lucky in the sense that I have a little bit of
a lot of freedom.
I have
do
a lot
this
of creative
point.
Freedom.
Yeah,
but you know, but look, you know, I'm still working for food. You
We'd
know
like
what I mean?
To make like, some bucks
it,
too.
It's time to,
I hear you,
to step it up. You
no,
know
I
mean?
Hear you. I hear you. I mean, I just this film for me though. Yeah, but that's a great attitude. The attitude they have because anytime you make plans, especially in this business, you're fucked. Don't make plans.
Yeah,
you just need to stay open. to the possibilities. It's like dating. It's like dating. If you meet a girl and you're like, this is the one I'm marrying in this day and age, you're fucked. Don't make plans. Just go with the flow to a degree, but keep your mind open.
No, you got to stay assertive, and you got to put projects out there, and you got to meet people and do play that game. But, you know, I just have to be patient. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to force anything. And the street attorney, it was Gerard's idea. He came to me, and then we kind of molded it and put it together.
Were you a little like, when he came to you with the idea, were you like, I'm not a reality guy, or like, uh-oh, here we go, someone's going to pitch me another thing?
No, originally I told him, I said, look, the reality's really not my thing.
Right.
But then I thought about it, and I kind of coined reality-based procedural. It's law and order based on a real mob lawyer.
No, it's smart.
So I felt like, because of my feature background, we can craft a story that people are going to want to watch week to week.
That's great. That's great. So what else do you have going on right now? Are you writing?
No, I'm not writing. I wrote the pilot. I got a couple of projects that I co-wrote over the last year that I'd like to talk to some people about. There's some smaller studio projects that I'd love the opportunity to pitch.
Sure.
But right now, I'm a free agent. You know, I cleaned house. So I have no agent, no manager. And
really?
I just want to...
I was going to ask you what your agent saw to the film, and now you just told me.
Yeah, I mean, that happened all recently. So, but it's good, though. You know, it's good.
But now you're out there, and you have a great film. I mean, you take that film to anybody in town, you'll get an agent.
Yeah.
Whoever you want,
again,
probably.
It's one of those things where I'm open to everything, man. I'm not,
smart. Are you going to let them come to you? Is that the plan?
Yeah, just let them, if they're interested. Because, you know, the thing is like, it's the agent culture, I get it. It's not great, but I understand it, and I understand where they're coming from, and I understand that if they don't have anything to talk about, they're not going to get you a job.
They really do have the keys to the kingdom, don't they?
They do. They do, and if... And I want somebody to come to me and say, look,
it's like the mob a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Except I can't, you know, I'm the kind of guy that, you know, look, I don't take shit from anybody. I don't suffer fools. I'm not an idiot. If you're not working for me, you're not working for me. And we should part ways. You know what I mean? I don't derive pleasure from saying I'm at this agency or that agency.
Right.
Oh, if you're not working for me, then what's the point?
I have friends that were at CAA and William Morris, and they weren't doing anything for them. And, yeah, it's great you tell me you're at CAA, but you haven't worked in 2 years.
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, you got to go somewhere where you're going to get personal attention. They're going to sell you. They got to sell you.
They got to be passionate about me. I'm a product. You know what I mean?
Imagine this. They wouldn't take you on unless they thought they could sell you.
Exactly.
Motherfucker.
Sell me like a Mexican Coke.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's great. Not Mexican Coke. A Mexican Coke.
A Mexican Coke.
Bottle. Yeah. We're not saying cheap
real
and
sugar.
Under the table.
With the real sugar.
You're
right.
The real sugar.
Oh, once again, though, let me just – film's great.
Thanks,
film
man.
Is great.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to see this. I mean, I'm going to be buzzing about this. I'm so happy this movie's out. I'm telling all my friends back home, they got to watch it. I mean,
I appreciate it. And I got to give a lot of credit to my producing partners, Chris Kelly and Andrea Natoli, who really were responsible for getting this thing going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Andrea saw it as a stage reading about 3 years ago. No, 4 years ago now. And she approached me a few months before we made the film. She's like, let's just get this thing going, man.
Yeah.
It was good. And I had made a lot of changes after that. But they were both very passionate about it, and we got it going. And then, you know, Chris stepped in and stroked the check and greenlit the project.
Who's,
and off we
who's
went.
Who's the first person that discovered this script that you wrote and said, I'm going to get you the money? I believe in this.
Well, I had a couple of people look at it early on.
Yeah.
One of the our co-executive producer, Michelle Manning, who used to run Paramount, saw it, read it a few years ago, probably about a year or two after I wrote it.
Sure.
And she was really passionate about it and helped me craft it and make it entertaining. And, you know, she was probably the first person that said, you know, this thing needs to get made. And then it was just a matter of me being out there, you know what I mean? Like, I've made three films with no help really.
Right.
You know, what not, I can't say no help, but with no help from the industry.
Oh no, when I shot our TV pilot that we did, and we had big names at Common, Kate Walsh, all these people, I got the money from my friends.
Yeah. We shot it totally independently, almost.
It's the only place you can get it from, you know? Yeah. And I've noticed you work with your friends. So,
oh, yeah, I've built the...
Do you think that's kind of like how we grew up? Do you think that's in a way?
Definitely a cultural thing. You know,
I think so, too.
We don't venture too far out of the box. And,
no. We don't like meeting new people.
Yeah, no.
Not really.
Stay in your little circle, your little social club.
You go with what you know.
I've met a bunch of people in town, a bunch of wonderful, wonderful people in town.
Sure.
But my boys are my boys, you know.
And the thing about your boys is when you work with them, they can read you quicker than the new guy. I mean, it's no offense to the new guy, and the new guy actually may have more raw talent or whatever.
No question about it.
But maybe you work better as a team with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could see that with this film. They shot in 18 days, and it's as great as it is. I mean, you had to be on all cylinders. Go ahead. What'd you have, Lee?
No, none of your friends call you on your bullshit.
They do. Yeah. Your friends do call you on your bullshit.
Which mine do, and yours do.
Do your friends have to call you on your bullshit making this movie?
No.
You love it? I love that face.
It's great. Everyone loves it.
Oh, I wish we were on TV. That's the face right there.
It's not that. They're not afraid to disagree with me.
That's great.
And I'm not afraid to disagree with them. I mean,
yeah.
Disagree
my foot up your ass.
Right. What was catering like on this set?
Delicious. Delicious.
Yeah,
the deli that we shot
You had deli food, didn't
well,
you?
Yeah, well,
oh, yeah.
Well, the deli we were in, it's a real deli. It's,
what's the name of it?
Village Gourmet on Elliott and 80th in Middle Village in Queens. And the guy that owns it, Mario Ruffo, plays the guy.
Oh, Mario, you mean, huh?
Yeah, you know Mario.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. Keep talking.
So he actually played the guy that speaks Sicilian.
Yeah.
In the Sicilian club with great, you know, great actor. It was his first big role. He kicked ass. I mean, Sorvino carried him,
know,
and made him look really good. But the food was great. I mean, I was in my friend's neighborhood. You know, one of my best friends from high school, Ignacio Panapinto, who's also a co-exec producer on it. He made so much possible. You know, he opened all the doors. I mean, the neighborhood gave us carte blanche, and everyone was so delightful. And
that's great.
And, you know, they were like, yeah, whatever you need, that's need a house, you need a restaurant, you want to eat, you know, it's like, we didn't have to pay for anything.
I don't know whose house
my wife would do a scene with you. You know?
I don't know whose house that is. You film Rappaport's family, but man, I want to live there. That's a house.
Yeah, that was
a nice New York house.
Yeah.
Right there.
Another guy who became a dear friend, who was friends with Ignacio Ernesto and his wife Kim, you know, they opened up their house.
Killer house.
Yeah,
great house.
And he's a contractor, so that was all him.
That cow manure seems fantastic.
I love that. Yeah, yeah.
It's fantastic. That is when, like, I'm just waiting for some mafioso shit, and I'm like, This isn't gonna go that way.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is great. I thought it's fantastic. David, thank you so much for coming
by. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
David Rodriguez,
you're great.
Last I heard, it's gonna be in theaters hopefully soon.
Hopefully this fall.
Definitely video on demand. Now you gotta get that going.
Definitely.
Because I'm sure tons of people, all the old timers will click it.
Yeah. But you know, we made a movie for the old timers. So they better get their get out of bed, you know, get off the sofa.
Yeah.
And
how many social clubs are going to be watching this movie this year?
And I hope not the bootleg, though. You know, I mean, pay the $12, buy a bag of popcorn, and come into the theater because we finally made a movie for you guys.
You
if
hear
it's
that?
The Italian American Club on 30 popcorn, it's going to be Mastaccioli. I mean, this gym. When you walk out of the gym, at the end of the gym, there's a table set up with Mastaccioli sausages.
Prosciutto.
Like, yeah, right. Why the fuck go to the gym?
Exactly.
I got to tell Montaigne to see this, too. I think he'd love it. This is a great flick.
Yes,
great
man.
Flick, man. Thank you, David, so much. Anything else to leave from you?
No.
Or else we can wrap up today.
Because
the Hawks game's on.
That's right. Go Black
I
got to
order one of my salads.
That's right. You
so
got to
keep working out.
Yeah.
Thank you, David, so much.
Thanks,
last
guys.
I heard,
it.
great flick.
Thank
all
you.
Right, and thank you very much to our listeners, and we will see you next Wednesday. Thank you also to Mark Evan Jackson. Kings of Summer is in theaters now. Nick Offerman, Megan Mullally, and Mark Evan Jackson.
Yeah.
So check it out. And Lee, you got anything?
Taste Chicago, 603 Hollywood Boulevard.
Hollywood way, but
Hollywood.
You're close.
All right,
you're close.
That's
you
who?
Just send people the vetoes, but yeah. It's all okay. Right. It's all right.
Fuck.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
That's,